From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM, the last hour of the program tonight, The Sci-Fi Craze with Mark Zachary. Happy birthday, by the way, Tim from Los Angeles. I call him Mr. Ambassador, longtime Coast to Coast listener. Also, I was doing an interview tonight for the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, a documentary group here doing a major show on 2012. Those of you up in Canada, I will let you know when they plan to air that in the future. They are very thorough. Here's what's happening. Approaching the one-month mark since the Deepwater Horizon rig exploded in the Gulf of Mexico, officials reported some progress in capturing some of the gushing crude oil, even as some of the sheen has entered the loop current that we've been warning about as they prepare now another large-scale attempt to stop the oil near its source on Sunday. BP, the company responsible for cleaning up the spill, says it is now able to siphon 3,000 of the 5,000 barrels of oil flowing daily from the ruptured well beneath the Gulf with the mile-long tube inserted last Sunday into the riser pipe. But in its 2009 exploration plan for the Deepwater Horizon well, BP states that the company could handle a spill involving as much as 12.6 million gallons of oil a day, a number 60 times higher than its current estimate of the ongoing Gulf disaster. In associated documents filed with the U.S. Minerals Management Service, the company says it would be able to skim 17.6 million gallons of oil a day from the Gulf in the event of a spill. That's not happening. As of Tuesday, BP reported recovering 6 million gallons of oily water since the ongoing spill began 4 weeks ago. Of that, according to experts, only 600,000 gallons of it is oil. The Coast Guard has announced that the blobs of tar that washed up in the Florida Keys earlier this week are not related to the Gulf of Mexico spill. The Coast Guard analyzed the tar balls as evidence mounted that at least some oil from the spill soon would arrive in South Florida. The analysis determined conclusively that the tar balls collected from the Keys beaches do not match the type of oil from the Gulf spill. That's according to the agency that looked at this. The source of the pollution is unknown. Captain Kelly Sweeney, Master Mariner, on the line with us now. Well, Kelly, what's the latest now?
Ahoy, George. Well, I first of all, I heard you last night, and I want to say that I agree, and my sources very close to the spill agree with you, that the amount spilled is much more than what we have been told officially. How much more? One of my sources feels it's almost 20 times that. But and the thing is, too, George, about the loop current, finally, they're admitting that after a long time, that the loop current has now impacted the oil spill. But what they're not mentioning, and what a lot of people don't realize, is that the loop current is not a surface current. The loop current is actually hundreds of feet below the surface of the Gulf of Mexico. Now, when you mentioned the large millions of gallons of oil plumes underneath the surface in one of our discussions recently, you were right on. And what the thing is, you cannot see where those plumes are. They can't, and you can't recover that oil when it's in that state that far down, and you certainly can't stop it from getting into the loop current when it's that far down. And so this is going to be a major issue as time goes on, and they're going to try a junk shot supposedly this weekend, a last-ditch effort that if that doesn't work, it could mean the relief wells are the next option, and that's going to be 2 months down the road. And one thing, George, also that you and I talked about, it is turning in now into an international incident. The State Department has admitted that they are in talks with Cuba on what kind of responsibility we're going to take when it washes up on their shores. And one thing that I want to tell the Coast listeners tonight before we go further that nobody's talking about but is looming on the horizon in 2 weeks is the start of hurricane season.
That's right, Kelly. Oh, my gosh, what a disaster this could be. Not only for this area where the spill is, but all these other rigs that are out there.
You're right, George. I mean, they still have not recovered the log books and the voyage data recorder, the black box on the Deepwater Horizon, which would have given a much more detailed indication of what went on in the hours before the explosions that started this whole thing. And, you know, this, the Deepwater Horizon and these rigs that are out there are not American vessels, even though they're drilling in our territorial waters. They are what's called foreign flag vessels.
That's right.
The Deepwater Horizon was registered in the Marshall Islands, which is like Saipan and over in the Pacific. And they do that, companies do that for tax reasons, like a lot of offshore companies to register in the Bahamas and offshore. They register these vessels because they're not U.S. Coast Guard maritime regulations that apply to U.S. ships do not apply to these foreign flag ships. They're not under the same rules, and they're not under the same kind of scrutiny. And obviously, the authorities let that happen, and they weren't watching closely.
All right. Thank you, Kelly. Keep your eyes on this for us, as you do. If you use skin creams to eliminate age spots and freckles, take heed. Some of them could contain a dangerously high level of toxic mercury that can cause kidney damage, according to an investigation by the Chicago Tribune. The newspaper found that 6 out of 50 skin lightening creams tested by a certified lab contained amounts of mercury that broke U.S. federal law. 5 of the creams had formulas that had 6,000 parts per million of mercury, enough to cause kidney damage. The products tested were purchased in a variety of stores, including grocery stores, beauty supply stores, salons, herbal medicine shops, and on the internet. The products were manufactured in Lebanon, China, India, Pakistan, and Taiwan. Retailers selling the mercury cream said that they would remove them from the shelves, and 2 distributors are discontinuing them. Mercury is absorbed through the skin rapidly, and toxic poisoning from mercury can range from blurred vision, trouble walking, to shutting down organs, and in severe cases, even death. The FDA may start to disclose more details on drugs. Maybe they've been listening to our program. The nation's top drug regulator has proposed to disclose more information about safety problems with the drugs and devices it rejects. The effort is part of a broader plan to remove the public image of the Food and Drug Administration, which has come under fire for being too secretive. The agency says that they're going to suggest 21 ways where the FDA could release more information to us, including an evaluation of drugs and food manufacturing inspections. Eating veggies seems to be a good goal, but for an 88-year-old Chinese woman, she took it a little too far, consuming enough raw bok choy to send herself into a life-threatening thyroid-induced coma. The woman showed up at a New York emergency room complaining that she could not walk or swallow. The real trouble, according to a report in the New England Journal of Medicine, was that she'd been chowing down up to 3 pounds of bok choy every day for several months in hopes of controlling her diabetes. Wine lovers, you can rejoice. A study out of France, of course, it's France now, has found that people who drank up to a half a bottle of wine a day are healthier than people who abstain from drinking. The mortgage crisis is dragging down the economy and the economic recovery as more homeowners fall behind on their payments. The last report, 10% of homeowners with mortgages had missed at least one payment through the January-March period. A big jump in the number of borrowers who have missed now 3 months of mortgage payments also drove the increase. Catherine Austin Fitz, she's watching this for us. This is not good news, Catherine.
No, George, we have several things coming together at once, and it's kind of the Molotov cocktail of the mortgage market. It's serious. Let me go through them. Many of what has traditionally been thought of as the American middle class is in a squeeze, in a pincer movement. They have falling income. We have unemployment and long-term unemployment at literally record highs, and that's before going through the state and local budget cutbacks that we know we have to go through this summer. So they've got income falling. At the same time, because of the bailouts, because of the easy money, the monetary sort of the things the federal government has been doing, the central bank, we have significant inflation. If you look at energy prices, food prices, both the official statistics and sort of more reliable statistics. So we have falling incomes and rising expenses. And it's that pincer movement that's not getting better for many, many people. And, of course, ultimately you're going to see that translate in not being able to carry the mortgage. A second thing, what many Americans don't understand, George, is one of the chief reasons for the rise in housing prices in this country has been bigger and bigger houses. And we've been building houses that are not energy efficient, are very big, and are not organized to have the kind of low maintenance as you want in this kind of environment. If you look at the house that most people would go out and buy now, knowing what they know, it wouldn't consume as much energy on the commute, it wouldn't use up as much energy for heating, you know, it'd be much more energy efficient. So part of it is people are struggling with paying for the maintenance of a housing stock, which really is not appropriate to the environment we're in and we're going into. And then finally, you have a tremendous number of mortgages underwater. And when you're struggling and you have to choose between paying your mortgage and buying food, and your mortgage is on a house that is significantly, your mortgage is much greater than your house is worth, well, you're going to let it go. So we have people just walking on mortgages because they say, you know, this is not, it's not a good investment.
It's not worth it.
It's not worth it.
I know some people who got a notice that their house was going up on foreclosure. It took 8 months for the foreclosure auction to occur. Every month it got postponed. And on the eighth month, the bank, the major lender on that property, bought the note. And now it's been 2 months, and they haven't even heard from the bank, and they're still in the house.
That doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, you hear many stories like that. At some point, you're going to see these banks come back and ask people to stay if they'll just rent and take care of the property. Because if you have a property not occupied, it becomes much more expensive and you run the chance of much more deterioration. So, you know, but we're going to see neighborhoods where people are paying, let's say they're paying $2,000 a month on their mortgage, and they can literally walk across the street and rent something for $1,000.
They'll do it.
Yeah.
They'll do it. What's new on Solari.com?
Well, the Solari Report is really cooking. I love doing it. I only do it once a week, so I'm not like you, George, with every night. But we're doing a series on chemtrails, and the response has been incredible. It was this. What you realize is there's so many people who want to understand personal finance, but for someone who knows what you teach them. So once you finish teaching them what's really going on, they want to know, okay, well, what do I do about it? You know, what's the personal financial angle on all of this? And so that's what we're doing, and it's great.
All
I
right.
love it.
Thanks, Catherine. Catherine's website, part of our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com, Solari.com. The name John Shepherd Barron. You probably don't know who John Shepherd Barron is. The Scotsman, credited with inventing what? When you go to a bank, maybe a drugstore, wherever you go, and you want to get money out of an ATM, he invented the world's first ATM. He has died after a short illness. He was 84. See, this is news you can use. John Shepherd Barron, well, once said he came up with the idea of cash dispensers after being locked out of his bank. He also said that his invention was inspired by chocolate vending machines. Italian prosecutors believe pizza in Naples may be baked in ovens lit with wood from coffins dug up from the local cemetery. Yuck. Investigators in Naples suspect thousands of small, lower-end pizza shops and bakeries may be using wood from caskets to keep the ovens burning. Naples' graveyard has long been hunting grounds for thieves. Last year, 5,000 flower pots were stolen from the cemetery. And our feature story at coasttocoastam.com, go take a look. Our United Kingdom Aquarium is celebrating after successfully breeding one of the most dangerous amphibians on Earth. Why they would celebrate is beyond me. It's called the Phantasmal Poison Frog. It can kill anyone who merely touches it. They've got skin 200 times more toxic than morphine. The frogs are found on the western slopes of the Andes in Ecuador and South America. They are so rare that they are in danger of becoming extinct. 26 of them born now at this UK aquarium. That's why they're happy. But man, stay away from those. Up next, Claude Swanson joins us. life force, the scientific basis, as we talk about consciousness and scientific evidence for the paranormal and the unusual. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Life Force, the Scientific Basis, Claude Swanson's work, MIT and Princeton educated physicist. He has worked as a conventional applied physicist for more than 20 years. He has conducted extensive research into the physics of the paranormal. Now, this research has involved scientific measurements and haunted houses, experiments in remote viewing and psychokinesis, and testing of new devices which can measure these very strange forces. Claude was on with me back in June of 2008 as we talked about the synchronized universe, and here he is again on Coast to Coast AM. Claude, how are you?
I'm doing great, George. Great to be back.
Likewise. Yeah. Looking forward to this tonight. I always enjoy talking to you. You open up our minds. You know,
you just... Well, thank you. You have over the years, too, so we're all very grateful to you, George.
Tell me a little bit about you. You know, you were on with me back in 2008. A lot of new listeners have popped in since then. Tell us a little bit about your background and your current the projects you've been working on.
Sure. I started out as a, you know, sort of a naive, credulous scientist like so many, and believing what I was being taught in the school, and that's what I went through the whole MIT, Princeton, and graduate school and postgraduate work, and somewhere along the lines, after that, I began hearing rumors about remote viewing, and that was what was my first clue that something was missing in my conventional scientific education. And once I began digging into it, I found more and more things that were strange, that did not quite fit the paradigm that I'd been taught in school, and I tend to be very thorough when I go about these things, mm-hmm. so it was kind of surprising to find out that so many of the beliefs that we are taught in our Western scientific education are missing pieces, and part of it is that our scientists don't really look in the strange places. We set up laboratory experiments that are, you know, based on certain conditions, but if we go into a strange place, like a haunted house, oftentimes energies are encountered that don't fit our current theories, and that was what was exciting to me. Today, I've just finished the second book, The Life Force, which tries to put a sort of scientific basis underneath of paranormal phenomena to explain how these things happen.
Our mailroom, by the way, needed a crane to bring it up to me in my office. Whoa, did you put some work into that one?
I did not intend the book to be so big, believe me. When I started this book to be volume two after the first one came out in 2003, and I thought, well, it'll take a couple of years and be just a snap. I thought I knew most of what had to be done, what I discovered as I began delving into it is this has been a very, very active time for discovery. In our sciences, especially in the forefront and the border area sciences, and so many things have been figured out in the past 10 or 15 years that all play into how the paranormal works and how these extraordinary energies work. And what I ended up with, without expecting it, was an understanding of life. And I almost called the book The Secret of Life. I thought that was too presumptuous. But it's kind of how it feels, because what we end up with now for the first time maybe is a comprehensive understanding and description of what makes a living being, even in part the spiritual interactions. And so I could talk about that later, but
sure.
I had not expected this was going to go so far, and I kept wanting it to be over and me to be able to say the end. But it just took this long.
Do you find yourself going against the grain, against the scientific grain?
Well, yes, but there are amazing scientists around the world who are going the same direction I am. And I think the real difficulty is that, particularly in America, we don't hear enough about that work. In this book, for example, I talk about the Russian torsion work, which started in the 50s, It got government support for 30 years. We wouldn't know about it except for glasnost and perestroika when it all came out in the early 90s. But in America, there's very little that's talked about it, even though that's kind of becoming a more or less standard science over there. In the same way, acupuncture, of course, is natural for Oriental doctors.
Sure.
But in this country, it's only the past 20 or 30 years, and still it's pushed off to the side as a, you know, as a marginalized alternative medicine. But
well, we're going to take this quick break, Claude, and come right back with you. Full program with Claude Swanson tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Well, if you're not a member of Streamlink yet, you can be for just pennies a day and get downloads, past archives, iPhone apps, and just have some fun. Just go to coasttocoastam.com, and down there you can sign up for Streamlink. And welcome back. We're with Dr. Claude Swanson. His website's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Claude, when you wrote The Synchronized Universe, why did you call it that?
It's basically from a physics model. I tried to understand how it could possibly be that these strange things happen. How is it possible that certain healers and certain psychics can walk through walls? I know some of these things may sound strange to people, but in China there are experiments with experts who are very adept at causing objects to go through walls. We know the Philippine healers, some of them, of course, may be, you know, fooling people with chicken gizzards, but there are some very well-documented cases where people in trance state are able to pass their hands through solid objects. So we have lots of solid cases like that, and the problem is, how can you explain it? But if you go over the wide range of psychic phenomena, it comes to the conclusion that matter is not the solid stuff that we're used to thinking about. It's not billiard balls. Most of the atom is empty, and the particles are very tiny, and they're wiggling around in a huge space. And it's really, what is it that makes an atom seem solid? And that's where the synchronized universe idea came from, that if particles only interact when their motions at the smallest scales are synchronized with each other, that would explain how it is that these objects can seem solid, and yet it's possible to turn off those forces by shifting the frequency or shifting the phase. And if you can do that, then you can have many parallel universes all in the same place because they have different frequencies. It ends up explaining a lot of the things that are seen in the paranormal.
How did these practitioners, Claude, pick up on this? I mean, how did they know? And there are a number of people out there, we'll talk about a few of them later on specifically, but how did they learn this?
I think that our consciousness also perceives the outside world by synchronization. I think that when we are born, when we grow up and become acclimatized to what we call reality, that our consciousness becomes synchronized with the material world around us as part of that process. And so it's kind of built in and instinctive. And most of us say, well, we can't change the physical reality because we're so used to staying synchronized with the matter that we deal with, the forces, et cetera. But there are some people, and shamans, yogis, certain extraordinary people who have learned how to control their state of consciousness, who seem to be able to shift realities. They can walk through walls. They can teleport. They can do all kinds of things. And these unusual people are well documented at this point. And it seems to be control of how the mind focuses and synchronizes with the external reality that seems to be the key. So I think that it's partly built into our system, but through training, it's possible to unlearn it and to learn how to control that focus process. Mm-hmm. That's part of what the second book talks about, because I mentioned quantum consciousness, you know, the understanding of what is consciousness. And I think that the way the mind synchronizes with external reality is a big part of consciousness.
Are you convinced, Dr. Claude Swanson, that psychokinesis, levitation, teleportation, OBEs, all of this is beyond a shadow of a doubt real? It happens?
Yes. Yes, I am. There's enormous amounts of evidence for all of these things. And, of course, in each case, you have to go dig. you know, you won't find the best evidence laid out in the public media, unfortunately.
No.
I wrote my book as a way to try to pull together best evidence to show that there is very solid evidence. For example, the Princeton Pear Lab worked for 30 years and more collecting data on psychokinesis, the ability of people to affect objects at a distance. Likewise, on ESP and remote viewing, they did similar amounts of work. Over the cumulative effect of all their data over 30-some years is now 35 trillion to one odds against chance that these things are real.
You know, on the face of it, I'm going to tell you a quick story. Both of us would say, nah, come on, didn't happen. But there was such a conviction in this person's voice when he called me a couple of years ago that he was driving, and for whatever reason, it looked like he was going to go head-on into another oncoming car. 50, 60 miles an hour, at that rate, you're dead when you do a head-on collision, because that's like 100 or 120 miles an hour.
Yep.
When you both hit.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, George, there was no way I was going to be able to steer my way out of it. I was trapped on the left, and there was a truck on the right, and I was stuck. And this car was coming right at me. Now, this is where initially we'd say, these things don't happen. They can't happen. He said, seconds before I was going to collide with this other car, less than that, I looked at the eyes of the other person in the other car who had this look of panic on his face, as he should.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, and I did too, and I just braced myself, closed my eyes. I knew it was all over. He did too. And he said, it never happened. He said, I came, my eyes opened. I had gone through the car.
Uh-huh.
He had gone through mine.
Yeah.
Without one scratch.
Uh-huh.
And we both stopped our cars, got out and looked at each other, and just, like, drove away.
Yep.
How does that happen?
You know, I've started collecting stories like this the past couple of years. I didn't used to believe it either. It was probably Richard Bartlett and his Matrix Energetics got me thinking about this, because he has the theory that we have these, you know, various possible parallel realities, and we can shift from one to the other as a way of healing. And I realized when I heard that this was consistent with my synchronized universe model. It's exactly the same model. And so for the first time, I said, well, then maybe it's real. And I've talked to shamans, and I've been talking to various kinds of healers, and this thing happens more than you'd ever think. And in each of the kahunas of Hawaii, you know, traditional healers there, for them, this is the normal way they heal. They often heal bones, for example, broken bones, instantaneously, you know?
Oh, yeah. I used to, years ago, study hands-on healing as much as I could. I was obsessed with it.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I came away with the conclusion that if you understand it, if you know how to get into the groove with it, you can do remarkable things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's out there. It is, as you say, a life force. And it's huge, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's the strange thing. I mean, if we just assume that life continues with cause and effect in normal Western physics, and our consciousness stays focused on this one reality, then these things don't happen. But if we are able to shift into an altered state, if you like, a state where all these possibilities, you don't focus on one possibility, but you allow them all to be present, these things seem to happen fairly frequently. And that state is the state where you create the special energy that we call chi or prana or the life force. That's what's present, or subtle energy. That's what's present when we enter these altered states. And that's where the physics laws all of a sudden become like Alice in Wonderland. So that's the exciting part to me.
Let's get into some of the topics that you cover in the life force.
Okay.
Go ahead. The chi, explain that.
Well, of course, as you know and the listeners know, Qi is something that in Oriental medicine is something very familiar. They talk about it as the life force there, and it's been around for thousands of years. It's part of their standard medicine, but in Western physics, we would say it doesn't exist, and we don't have a way to describe what it is. What I have been doing in this book is trying to figure out what it is and put in a context where Western science can understand it. And I can say it in about three or four sentences, probably. Essentially, there are two polarities, two types of this energy. And one tends to push time forward. One tends to slow it down and pull it back. One tends to increase entropy, which is a tendency toward randomness. One tends to work the other way, to neg entropy, to building, to creating structures. And that's one of the reasons why humans are so efficient. So these two different forms of energy are both present, and they are qualities of the vacuum. We talk about, you know, the vacuum energy of space, the zero-point energy. What we now know is that that energy has a structure to it. It's not just random and amorphous. There are aspects and forms that occur in that vacuum that are very special, and that's where the Qi occurs. And there's these two types. The Russians would say the right-handed spin of energy, which they call torsion, is the part that tends to decrease entropy, tends to help structures to build, like in our proteins and our metabolism. The other structure tends to speed things up and tends to go the other way. So in a nutshell, that's at least one piece of
one
that.
Piece of many.
Yeah. The cartoon that I put in the book, you know, of the six blind scientists and the elephant, tries to illustrate this point, because subtle energy or Qi occurs in many different forms. It affects every other physical process, every other physical force. And so if you are a scientist looking at this from one lens or one perspective, you'll say it's a wall or it's a tree trunk or it's a rope. You know, you won't see the whole picture. That's been one of the difficulties with fully appreciating this energy.
As a scientist, Claude, I'm fascinated by your thoughts of quantum consciousness as well. I bet when you were going to MIT and Princeton, you didn't think about that.
No, that's right. The funny thing about our Western mindset, and I assume it's still the same today, is it's kind of mechanical. You know, you focus on the machines and you have your equations and you kind of think that the world follows these rules, and the human mind is just sort of this messy thing that you want to pretend is not there, not important. And now we're entering a realm where we find that when consciousness and these energies or subtle energies are present, they can be the dominant effect. And for example, Bill Tiller has described experiments where he builds up this energy in his lab to high levels. And all someone has to do is take some data or just go in with a bad mood, and it messes up all the results. So we're living in a time now where the human being is part of the experiment.
What made you decide to go for it and go with this book, Life Force, at this time?
I think the biggest thing is that when my first book, Synchronized Universe, came out, as you know, it has a lot of examples of different types of paranormal phenomena, what's sort of best evidence for these different things. And every one of them pretty much violates Western physics. But as a scientist, that to me is just a starting point. That's not the ending. I wanted to understand how we can make a science out of this, how we can integrate all these examples into a new science which can explain these phenomena. Also, I have a lot of dear friends in Colorado who belong to an organization called ICEM, which stands for International Society for the Study of Subtle Energy and Energy Medicine, especially subtle energy. And a lot of them are scientists. A lot of them are very interested in these subjects too. A lot of them are healers, and every energy healer has the same, he works with the same energy, the same Qi energy, but a lot of them, I mean, we have no science to explain what this stuff is or how it's possible for an energy healer to affect someone, to heal somebody thousands of miles away, and yet we have lots of evidence that they do. So a lot of these people are very curious about how this stuff works, so that's been part of my encouragement.
Did you do any work into how Adam, he's been on the program before, he was a kid, he's not a little kid anymore,
right?
But he has the ability to heal that way.
I know of Adam. I have his books. I haven't done any specific research on him. I have been working with Qigong masters and other healers like that, that do work where you can measure their effects, but I have not met Adam or talk to him personally.
Remarkable young man, Claude.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to do that.
Truly remarkable indeed.
Yeah.
In your work, The Life Force, you've talked about painting a picture of our existence, of what you call the secret of life.
Mm-hmm.
Have you found that secret?
At a certain level, I have. I mean, I'm sure the reason I avoided the title is that I think that we exist on many levels, and I talk about that in the book. The Theosophists would say there is the astral dimension and the mental and the causal. Each aspect of our personality and of our activity has its own dimension, its own level of reality. In the same way that in the synchronized universe, you can have parallel realities, but then there are also these higher levels where consciousness takes on different aspects. And so there's a limit to how far I can see. And so I'm looking at what I would call the physical, the etheric, and the astral, which is sort of the emotional parts that most healers work with. So that's my limitation. But within that, I found that there's a great deal that's been discovered the past 20 or 30 years. For example, Fritz Albert Popp's work in Germany with biophotons. He's proven that the DNA creates biophotons and also receives biophotons, little packets of light that pass through the body, and that basically enable the DNA to communicate and to control the physical processes within the body. What's more interesting is that this light is coherent. It acts like laser light. So it creates a hologram within the body. It's like a hologram that's a pattern, a blueprint of how the organs are supposed to be growing. And the acupuncture meridians are these very important channels that most Western scientists don't know much about. But in Eastern Europe, they've discovered they're actually waveguides for millimeter waves, as well as a few other things. The Korean scientists have been able to photograph them and show that they also carry stem cells that move. And as you know, stem cells, whenever they can turn into whatever type of tissue is needed. So they're really, really important for healing. The most important part that I won't say I've discovered, but at least among Western writers, there aren't people talking about this, is the torsion field, which is the Russian name for this subtle energy. And it exists even when electromagnetic energy is absent. For example, these biophotons, every time you make one, the DNA makes one, it also makes a torsion wave. Outside the body, most of the electromagnetic energy is kept inside the body, but outside the body is this torsion field, and that is what makes up the aura. And so we now have an answer to this long-standing question about the aura. What is it? It's a coherent holographic field of torsion waves. And what is long-range healing? That's when an energy healer takes that torsion field and sends it and interacts with the torsion field of the client.
Perfect.
That doesn't take the energy that biophotons would, but it still carries the information.
He or she knows how to move through that field and make it work for the victim, I guess, or the patient. And, you know, there have been a lot of events I go to, and there are always people there who take photographs of your auras. I have not done that yet. I have to. And I mean, I would just really like to see that. They can tell by colors and everything. But those practitioners, those healers, they can sense the aura, see the aura. I'll tell you a story when we come back from the break about Edgar Cayce. And if they see breaks in it, Claude, they know that somebody's ill or sick.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's truly remarkable. Where do people pick up this book, Life Force?
Right now, the best place is Amazon.com, or go to my website, SynchronizedUniverse.com, and you'll find several links there. If you click on one of those links, it'll take you right to it. Unfortunately, Life Force, the name, is not all that unique. There are many other books also with those words in the title, so it's easier to go to my website, and I'll take you to the correct one. If you search on Amazon, you may end up in the wrong spot.
As long as they put in your name, Claude Swanson, they'll get it.
That should get it.
More to come. We'll talk about auras. We'll talk about Edgar Cayce. We'll talk about the Princeton Pear Lab, and that stood for, of course, Princeton Engineering Anomalies Research. I believe it's closed now. We'll be back.